I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, battling the blaze. Devastating wildfires spread through Los Angeles as firefighters race to contain them. We have the latest. Legacy remembered. President Biden, President-elect Trump, and other American leaders attend the funeral of former President Jimmy Carter in Washington, D.C. Annual procession. Why hundreds of thousands of the faithful are gathering on the streets in the Philippines. Plus, it's very diplomatic. The Holy Father delivers a message of hope to embassy workers at the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Adrian of Canterbury. Our top story tonight, the California wildfires, where apocalyptic scenes of flames have engulfed the city of Los Angeles and caused catastrophic damage. But there is one bit of good news. The strong Santa Ana winds, which are fueling the flames, eased enough to allow aerial firefighting to resume. Authorities lifted the majority of the evacuation orders in the Hollywood Hills after the fire's advance was slowed overnight. Close to 2,000 homes, businesses and structures have been destroyed. So far, more than 100,000 remain under evacuation orders. The fires have already become the most destructive in the history of Los Angeles. Meanwhile, L.A. Archbishop Jose Gomez celebrated a special mass today at the Cathedral of Our Lady of the Angels for victims and first responders who have been affected by the fire. All right, now joining us from California is Anthony Barnes, General Secretary of the Salvation Army. Anthony, thank you so much for being with us today. And our thoughts and prayers are with everyone out there in California who've been affected by these just devastating wildfires. Tell us how the Salvation Army is helping during this time.
Absolutely. Thank you first for giving us the gift of access to speak on this platform. In Southern California right now, as you know, we're being devastated by these fires. But the Salvation Army is uniquely positioned to be able to serve immediately and respond to these natural disasters. We were part of the community before the disaster ever happened, and we continue to be part of that community with our neighbors in need today.
And what is the biggest priority right now and some of the biggest needs that you can see?
Some of the biggest priorities, as a standard with any of our disasters that we might experience, is housing, food, hydration, cleanup kits, and hygiene supplies. We want to make sure that people have a place to rest their head, a place to retreat to, if you will, and then food, the most basic human needs. We want to make sure that we are feeding into that, making sure that that's provided for, and that's really what the Salvation Army is known for.
Yeah, and these fires, I mean, they've destroyed entire neighborhoods, thousands of homes and businesses, churches, all reduced to rubble. Where will these people go, Anthony? I mean, if they don't have family or friends in the area, where are they going to stay?
Partnering with our city and county organizations, we've come alongside them to help place people where they have a place to rest their head. There's a few shelters and locations that have been opened up, about seven currently, and that continues to evolve. We're also feeding at those locations, making sure that we're meeting, again, those immediate basic needs, but those that are critical to life. We want to make sure that we restore hope into the lives of those who feel like they've lost so much already, but we have places for them to go. We have food to give them. We have water to provide with them to them, and hygiene kits to help keep them clean. We just want to give a little bit more hope to let them know they're not alone.
Yeah, and let me ask you this. I mean, of course, right now the priority is making sure people are safe. They have their basic needs met, evacuation. But what happens when the dust settles, so to speak? What are we looking at afterwards?
Thank you for asking that question. You know, we specialize in being there even before the disaster happens. We're there during the disaster and after the disaster. And I think that's a huge part to remember. This is going to go on long after the fires have been contained. These families are going to need assistance. And this is where the Salvation Army is able to come in with case management, working with other aid organizations, federal, state, and local authorities, to make sure that we identify and mobilize resources that will fit the needs of each individual that has had some kind of loss. We work along with those first responders to provide this restoration, really to restore them back to pre-disaster situations and circumstances. And I think that's critical. So we want to make sure that we are prepared to be on the ground, supporting those affected, and giving them exactly what they need.
Yeah, and sir, thank you so much for talking with us, taking the time to do this. We're praying for you all there. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much.
Well, the Los Angeles wildfires are also getting the attention of Congress. While previously approved emergency aid is already flowing into the area, there's also some finger pointing and blame going around about how those fires could have been prevented in the first place. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales tells us what lawmakers are thinking. Eric.
Yes, good evening, Tracy. Immediate aid isn't much of an issue for Congress. Just before Christmas, lawmakers passed a $100 billion emergency aid bill, replenishing FEMA and other agencies dealing with damage caused by the hurricanes last fall. Now, some of that money is already flowing into the state of California, but some Republicans argue that state Democratic leaders cut funding needed to keep Californians safe and even sent funds to Ukraine.
I heard today that there's a lot of their fire trucks went to Ukraine, a lot of their extra equipment. They cut the budget of the police. They gave increased the budget of the homeless. I mean, it's all backwards.
When bad governance meets a disaster, and now we have an even bigger disaster. And this idea that, you know, fire hydrants are out of water and all these other things, I mean, that is, somebody needs to go to jail.
Freshman Congressman Michael Baumgartner has a background in forest health and worked on a fire science research team in Washington State.
We do have too much fuel load in our forests across the West. That does need to be reduced in a healthy and sustainable way. And it's something that the federal government, hopefully under President Trump, will take a closer look. And we here in Congress need to do our part as well, too, to make sure that we have healthy forests.
Congress could also be asked to approve additional money for long-term recovery work.
We're prepared to act quickly and stay in Washington as long as necessary in order to get that emergency relief out to the families who are in harm's way in California.
Congresswoman Laura Friedman represents some of the fire-damaged areas.
These are very dense communities of many, many homes. So when these fires go into a community, it's not a house here separated by an acre and another home. These are homes that are right next to each other, and that's why these fires are so hard to contain, because there's very little to stop them.
And FEMA crews are already providing a number of services.
We're going to support the state and governor for his needs and making sure that we're bringing in all of those resources, whether it's crisis counseling, long-term housing, short-term housing, to help people manage, you know, what they're going through.
More money isn't the only issue. House Republicans are pushing to pass a bill to speed up forest thinning on federal lands. The Biden administration and Senate Democrats opposed the bill in the last Congress, arguing that the measure undermines water and wildlife protections. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Coming up later in the newscast, we hear firsthand from a longtime Los Angeles resident about how these devastating wildfires are impacting her community. I'll say goodbye to the nation's 39th president. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who passed away last month, was honored and remembered today in a state funeral at Washington National Cathedral here in our nation's capital. President Biden, delivering the eulogy, said that Carter held a deep Christian faith in God and showed Americans what it means to be a practitioner of good works. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tracy, born in 1924, President Jimmy Carter lived to be 100 years old. He grew up during the Depression before becoming the leader of the free world. He was elected in 1976, serving just one term, and today mourners packed the Washington National Cathedral.
Down the east steps of the U.S. Capitol this morning, military service members carry President Jimmy Carter's flag-draped casket, later to be transported to the cathedral. We're in attendance, all of Carter's living successors, Presidents Clinton, Bush, Obama, Biden, and President-elect Donald Trump, paying their respects. President Biden eulogized his longtime friend and fellow Democrat. Biden said Carter's endearing attribute was character.
Jimmy Carter's friendship taught me, and through his life taught me, the strength of character is more than title or the power we hold. It's the strength to understand that everyone should be treated with dignity. Respect.
And Biden thanked the Carter family for sharing Jimmy and Rosalind Carter with America and the world.
I miss him. But I take solace in knowing that he and his beloved Rosalind are reunited again.
Carter, a former naval officer, engineer, and peanut farmer, was celebrated for his personal humility and public service before, during, and after his presidency. And amidst the tears, smiles, and memories, some laughter too. Grandson Jason Carter shared a funny story about the former president's struggles with his cell phone.
And demonstrating that they changed with the times, eventually he did get a cell phone, and one time he called me sort of early on in that process. And on my phone it said, "Papa, mobile." So I answered it, of course. I said, "Hey, Papa." He said, "Who's this?" I said, "This is Jason." He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm not doing anything. You called me." He said, "I didn't call you. I'm taking a picture."
Carter, a Baptist who campaigned as a born-again Christian, also taught Bible school. He did go against Catholic Church teaching on abortion. Although he did personally believe abortion was wrong, nevertheless, he supported Roe v. Wade. Jimmy Carter will be buried in Plains, Georgia, alongside his wife, Rosalind. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, as leaders and dignitaries gathered to honor former President Jimmy Carter, EWTN News Nightly had a chance to speak with a presidential historian who helped Carter write his memoir. Steve Hawkman says that Carter left a legacy of peace.
I do hope what he will be remembered for his support of human rights and for peace. And there's so many different details where he worked as president, but also as a former president, going in and mediating conflicts, bringing the Carter Center to mediate and observe elections, to bring about a peaceful resolution of conflict. And these are things I believe he will be remembered for.
Hawkman also weighed in on President Carter's historic meeting with then Pope John Paul II back in 1979, the first time an American president hosted a pope.
They decided to talk about personal issues, although that also included public issues as well, but not to talk as diplomats. And they hit it off. A very friendly and warm conversation about what it would mean to the world if peace was brought to Israel and the Holy Land. And that was something that President Carter was very concerned about and emphasized with Pope John Paul.
Well, in other news, a federal court in Kentucky has blocked the Biden administration's proposed change to Title IX. The measure would have included gender identity to the law banning sex discrimination. Supporters say it is a major victory.
In fact, the court said that the Biden administration's rule essentially turns Title IX on its head, and it has so many harmful impacts across so many parts of our country, impacting so many of our freedoms. And we're encouraged to see this federal court vacate the rule and put things right where they belong, which is a proper understanding of Title IX as it was originally written.
Lawmakers also celebrated the decision. In a statement, Education and Workforce Committee Chairman Tim Walberg wrote, quote, "I am glad the court rejected the Biden-Harris administration's attempt to rewrite Title IX, which would have undermined safety, freedom, and fairness for women." Senator Bill Cassidy also weighed in. He wrote, "It is clear the Biden-Harris administration completely lost its way on Title IX. They betrayed the original intent of Title IX by removing longstanding protections that ensured fairness for women and girls. Good to see this harmful regulation overturned." New York's highest court has rejected President-elect Trump's request to postpone the sentencing in his hush money case. In May, Trump was convicted of 34 counts of falsifying business records. The judge has signaled that he will not impose any punishment, but Trump is still trying to block the sentencing, also asking the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene. The sentencing is scheduled for Friday. The highest court in the state of New Mexico strikes down abortion restrictions sought by officials in several pro-life cities and counties. The unanimous ruling reinforces New Mexico's position as home to some of the most liberal abortion laws in the nation. The justices said that state law prohibits any local attempts to ban or limit abortion. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including continuing coverage of the California wildfires. We hear from a Southern California woman about what she is seeing on the ground. And as political turmoil ripples through South Korea, one Catholic bishop is taking a stand. Hear what he has to say. Wildfires in California. For residents of the greater Los Angeles area, the past few days has been the stuff of nightmares. And joining us now is Francesca Elena, a longtime resident of Los Angeles who really is right on the edge of these fires. Francesca, we are so sorry for all that you guys are going through out there. Talk to us about, you know, where you live right now, how close you are to these wildfires, and what is the situation where you live?
Yeah, so right now I'm in Pasadena. I'm super close to Altadena. I'm literally outside right now. I was trying to give one of my friends a mask because the stores are running out of masks, like the pandemic kind of. But, you know, it's kind of scary because it's like you can really smell, of course, like the fires, and you see like so much like debris and trees and stuff, and literally I'm like out of breath just from walking from like here to like half a mile to try to meet my friend. So the air quality, I would have to tell you, is just so bad.
Yeah,
I would tell people to stay inside.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. All the smoke from the wildfires, it's really causing people to have a hard time breathing, especially those, I'm guessing, who have problems like, say, bronchitis or any kind of asthma issues. Have you ever experienced anything like this before, Francesca? I mean, how long have you been in the Los Angeles area?
Yeah, so I've been here for about 15 years now, and it seems like every year we're having fires. But in this particular area in Los Angeles, like so close to home, I've never seen it. I mean, driving by, you can see literally homes on fire the past couple of days, and homes are now like burnt to a crisp. Things are exploding that have gas. It's scary. It looks extremely scary. It's red and dark, and I've never seen anything like this since I've been here, especially so close.
I mean, we see those images. We had some pictures up right there, some video. It's hard for us to look at. I can't imagine being there in all of that. What's the mood like out there? I mean, how are people feeling?
Yeah, so today we're pretty much kind of just walking around and cleaning up stuff, cleaning up the debris. A lot of the trees fell down. There's a lot of trees and a lot of like leaves and just trash and stuff everywhere. So kind of still trying to clean up. In certain impacted areas, the police and the fire marshals are blocking everything off, so you can really only go so far, specifically where I'm at. But I think it's more so about right now, since the community, I have friends who have lost their homes that have lived here like all their lives. And one of my friends told me, she's like, she knew her home was burning down, so she wanted to grab her photos with her family. That was like her most prized possession, and she got them. So it's really a sense of community. Everyone's just trying to get things back together, even though we're still on fire, like literally.
I know so many communities just gone, devastated. Talk to us quickly about how the communities are coming together, how neighbors are helping neighbors in this time of need.
Yeah, so like I said, they're out of masks, so I'm trying to donate those. A couple of my friends are buying food there's a lot of homeless people already here, and there's a lot more that you're seeing right now that are just like walking around the streets. So trying to make sure that they're okay. Providing resources about evacuation centers. I'm going to one right now in Pasadena. It's the Civic Center. So really just trying to see kind of what people need, especially those people who are just walking around displaced right now.
Yeah, well, we're praying for everyone out there. Francesca, thank you so much for speaking with us, and stay safe.
Thank you.
A church leader in South Korea weighs in on the recent protests and impeachment of the country's president, speaking at a mass celebrated in the chapel of the National Assembly. Archbishop Peter Chung Soon-tak said in his homily, quote, "Regardless of which party is in government or in opposition, we must quickly restore political stability through democratic procedures." The Vatican News Agency says that more than two dozen Catholic members of parliament attended the mass. Afterwards, the Archbishop of Seoul met privately with several high-ranking lawmakers. On now to China, where the country's oldest priest has died at the age of 104. Father Joseph Hua faced 25 years of persecution, leaving a legacy of adherence to the Catholic Church. He wrote a letter describing prison as a place of spiritual growth, prayer, and reflection. Father Hua was one of the few Catholic priests ordained prior to the establishment of the People's Republic of China. Well, after a two-year deadlock, Lebanon has a new president. Today, Parliament finalized its strong support for an army commander.
Joseph Aoun.
Lawmakers applauded the announcement that General Joseph Aoun would be the country's 14th president. He has led the Lebanese army since 2017. The presidency in Lebanon is reserved for a Maronite Christian, while the role of prime minister is reserved for a Sunni Muslim, and the parliamentary speaker is always a Shiite Muslim. And now to Venezuela, where reports say an opposition leader has been arrested a day before President Nicolas Maduro's swearing-in ceremony. The arrest happened moments after Maria Corina Machado spoke to supporters. Venezuela's interior minister had warned that whomever entered the country with the opposition candidate, Armando Gonzalez, would be jailed. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Pope Francis is laying out his vision for diplomacy. The one thing he is asking for everyone on the diplomatic corps to embrace. Plus, hundreds of thousands take to the streets for a special procession, where it happened and why they're doing it. Hundreds of thousands of faithful marched in a procession in the Philippines to venerate a centuries-old statue of Jesus. The gathering is an observance of the Feast of the Black Nazarene. The faithful say they prayed for various intentions, including good health and an end to tensions in the South China Sea. A unique exhibit opens at the Vatican later this month. It is called Jordan, Dawn of Christianity, and the aim is to transport visitors to a sacred past in search of their Christian roots.
I hope the exposition will help us to understand better, to know better and to understand better Jordan, and to understand better also the situation of our Christian communities here. This is the occasion to renew our faith, because seeing the biblical places, seeing the places where Jesus was, seeing the places where the first communities were born, so this helps us to renew our faith, to know better our faith and to renew our faith.
With more than 80 artifacts and audiovisual elements, some dating back to the first century, this immersive experience will take you through 2,000 years of Christian history. Pilgrims across the world will have the opportunity to visit the exhibit from January 31st to February 28th. Pope Francis held his annual meeting with members of the diplomatic corps accredited to the Holy See. He invited all to embrace a logic of encounter and laid out his vision for a diplomacy of hope based on truth, forgiveness, freedom, and justice. Catholic news agency journalist Christina Millar has more.
Pope Francis delivered his annual State of the World address on Thursday, calling on world leaders to be artisans of peace in the 2025 Jubilee year. The Holy Father was unable to deliver his entire address because of a persistent cold. Instead, his speech was read by Monsignor Filippo Ciampanelli, who has also aided the Pope in the past. Nonetheless, the Pope still urged Holy See ambassadors to pursue a diplomacy of hope aimed at achieving integral human development in all nations. Pope Francis took inspiration from the book of Isaiah to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners, and insisted on the need for forgiveness in politics today.
We have come together this morning for a meeting that, apart from its institutional character, seeks above all to be a family event. A moment in which the family of people symbolically gathers through your presence to exchange fraternal good wishes, to leave behind the disputes that divide us, and instead to find what unites us. This is a summons to all those who serve the common good and who exercise that lofty expression of charity, that is, politics.
Forse la forma più alta di carità che la politica.
Describing peace in Ukraine as his wish for 2025, the Pope insisted that the entire international community must unite and work together to end the ongoing deadly conflict, and renewed his call for a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of all hostages. The Pope also warned the ambassadors of the dangers of fake news and ideological polarization that can endanger civil coexistence and the stability of entire nations and lead to violence such as the assassination attempt on President-elect Trump. The Holy Father also pointed out the plight of several African nations plagued by terrorism and unable to access adequate humanitarian aid. He renewed his call for wealthier nations and corporations to cancel the debts of Global South countries in order to advance equitable justice in the world. Towards the conclusion of the meeting, Pope Francis assured the ambassadors of the Vatican's desire to work alongside other nations to restore dignity for all peoples. In Rome, Christina Migliare, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank her for that report tonight. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.